So hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. This is part two of our 100th episode mailbag edition where we answer questions from you, the listener. I am one half of this podcast, Daniel O'Brien. I was going to do a whole thing about my accomplishments, but I bailed. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say hello.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, you sort of blew your load on the other episode. And the fact that we're doing a part two of the 100th episode makes me think we could just carry this through the whole season and just do the 100th episode all year long.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun.
Nobody's done that before.
No. And I don't love the idea of eventually having a 200th episode.
No, and this way we avoid two birds, one stone, I feel like.
Yeah. Let's thank Honey for sponsoring this episode. Let's do it right now. These days, it feels like online shopping is the only shopping we really do. That's where Honey comes in. It's the free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and automatically applies the best one available at checkout. Go to joinhoney.com/QQ.
Thanks to Hello Tushy for supporting Quick Question. Keep your sweaty crack clean all summer long with the latest in butt cleaning technology. Water. Clean your butthole with a bidet. Get 10% off plus free shipping and get your butt clean at hellotushy.com/QQ.
Let's get into these questions. Or do you have anything to say before that?
No.
Do we have any updates? We just saw each other in person.
It was really exciting. It was good to see Daniel. He looks great, by the way. I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast, but Dan has lost a bunch of, 18 pounds, Dan?
Yeah.
And you've been exercising and eating differently, and I noticed you weren't even drinking while we hung out.
No.
You look great. And
thanks, man. You too.
It was really great to see him. He came and he played with my children for a while, and I've got a COVID baby, as I've talked about on this podcast. She doesn't trust anybody. But she was really getting a kick out of Dan. He was making her laugh, and that was great.
It's very fun to find a game that works.
Yeah.
And I found one with your wonderful daughter where she would high five me and then I would react very dramatically and physically, and she enjoyed that, and it feels like a real easy win as soon as a kid likes one thing. It's like, oh great, I'll do this 900 times in a row, sure.
yeah, you do a victory lap each time you got a high five from her.
Yeah,
and it was like a very celebratory victory lap, and that was really making her chuckle. And she's got a fun little laugh, so it was nice for all of us. Then, of course, Ronan likes you too.
Yeah, and I saw your house. You and your wife made dinner for me. It was great. It was a wonderful time. No regrets.
Great.
And Turnabout's fair play. Fair play. You said I looked good. You looked great. And I think a real testament to that is when we were at this wedding we both attended. Someone that worked with us. It had to have been. Not even worked directly with us, but like worked in the same building for the same company, but whose paths we never crossed. This must have been a decade ago. She immediately saw you and said, "Are you Soren from Demand Media? Because you look exactly the same as you did."
Yeah. Meanwhile, I have a portrait in my attic that's just deteriorating and turning monstrosity into a monstrosity. All right, well, we're going to do another mailbag episode where we've taken some questions from all of you, because it turns out you're better question askers than we are. The stuff you're asking us, we thought, oh, actually, I would like to answer these questions, and this won't be a tedious chore. Instead, I might enjoy this episode.
Yeah, I think we've settled into a rhythm where we barely ask each other questions anymore, and it's mostly just like, I have a self-indulgent story that I want to tell. How do I get there?
It's either that or it's us revealing terribly honest things about ourselves and the other person being like, I know you want me to say that's okay. It's not okay. It's a little weird.
Yeah. You don't like how much gummy bears I eat, and I don't either. And there's nothing either of us can do about it.
Yeah, it's troublesome. Hands are tied, though. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
All right. I think our first question is from Least Haunted Podcast. At Least Haunted, I like that name. Least Haunted Podcast asks, what is an everyday blue-collar trade, like a plumber or a roofer, a mason or electrician, that you feel like you could easily slide into? This is slip into. I want to respect the words of the author. No period at the end, though.
Yeah.
Or question mark, I guess. I can go first here, Dan.
Yeah, please do.
I got two. I think that I could God, I really feel like I could make a business out of carpentry or woodworking. There are things that I make where, like a dresser, that I feel like I could sell on Etsy for easy. Like I could sell it for $200 and make a profit. The amount of woodworking that I've done and with the limited tools that I have makes me think, I know enough about this trade. I know what I'm capable of and what I'm not capable of. And I could make some stuff for people that they would be like, yeah, this looks like furniture. I would pay for this. And some of it's like the really popular stuff, like gas piping, that black piping on furniture, where you make bookshelf out of it, or you make a coffee table out of it, and then a combination of wood and the black piping. That's like the easiest thing in the world to make, because it's all those pipes are pre-measured. You rarely have to make custom pipes and thread them. And even that only costs like $30 to do. So making that kind of furniture is so easy, and it's all over the place on Etsy. And I feel like I could make a real business out of it.
I don't think I told you this, but I told someone else to contact you about furniture.
Oh, yeah?
This is not a business that you like offer or anything like that. But I was working out with a friend of mine while I was in LA. She just bought a house recently and was talking about how expensive, you know, just like stocking a house full of furniture is.
Yeah.
And I was like, email Soren. He'll build a table for you. He'll build whatever you want.
Will.
And he'll do it super cheap. And oh, he loves it.
I'm so excited. My next project is just shelves. And shelves are so boring. Yeah. So I would love to do something like that. I also think, and this may be a surprise to you, Dan, I think I could hop right into a career in turf maintenance and be fine.
That is a surprise to me.
Yeah, turf maintenance is, those are the guys who work on golf courses. And they are the ones who, like, they know how to make the grass grow. They know, like, how much water a spruce tree needs. They know how many holes they're allowed to put in a green before it starts to really fuck up the Bermuda grass. And I know all that stuff now because I worked on golf courses for so long when I was younger. And while I wasn't majoring in turf maintenance or anything, I definitely stuck around long enough to see how all these guys handled those situations when, like, the grass was just, like, not viable, and how often you had to reseed and stuff like that. So I feel like I could do that, and it would take maybe like a week of like brushing up on everything and remembering it all before I could really hop back into that career.
I feel like both of those things require some pretty real skills that I do not possess. I feel like the blue collar or blue collar adjacent job that I could do, and I don't even know if this is a job, but like moving boxes. I can elaborate on that. I volunteer weekly at my local food bank, not handing food to anyone, but just like moving food from a truck into the church. And it's really easy, fun work to do to, and I like the people that I volunteer with. We're a little squad there now. And it's the act of like repeatedly moving boxes from one place into another is very soothing and therapeutic to me. But a thing that I'm recognizing is like there's a lead guy who determines the manner in which we are stacking the boxes. Because we're putting them onto pallets so they can be transferred somewhere else at a later time. And he is always, he's just got very specific ways of lining up the boxes in a way that he thinks will make them more balanced when stacked together high. And I defer to him and his wisdom because he's in charge, and I'm not trying to overstep or anything like that. But I have notes. I don't love the way that he's choosing to stack boxes. I think it's very chaotic and aesthetically unpleasant. And I just think if I were in charge, I would do this better, and I would make us more efficient and I think a little bit safer, because sometimes his stacks fall down. And it's just work that I feel like I can do well and would like to do more of.
Interesting.
Stacking boxes.
You want your career to be the guy in a Law and Order episode who's got some information about the missing girl.
Yeah, and I'm way too busy to talk to stop what I'm doing and talk to the detectives.
you just keep going.
I'm just like bits and pieces where I'm like, yeah, I seen her, and then I put a box on the shelf. And the detectives are like, it would really help us out if you just like gave us all the information in one in one blast. And I'm like, yeah, I seen her. Blonde hair. Yeah. Excuse me.
I got work to do. Is that everything, detectives? Okay. Stacking boxes. Not necessarily something you go to trade school for.
No.
But
like, I've done it enough that I know that there is a good way to do it and a bad way to do it.
Yeah. I took some real pride back in the day when I was a bellboy at organizing and carrying luggage and like how many pieces of luggage I could carry at once, but also in the placement of luggage so that you could make it the most secure in the back of a golf cart. But I like really, it was such a simple thing, but I enjoyed the process of lifting heavy things and then getting them just right, like a Tetris game.
Yeah.
So I feel you on that.
We all shop online, and we've all seen that promo code field taunt us at checkout. It makes us feel small. Well, thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. Honey is the free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best ones it finds to your cart. Honey supports over 30,000 stores online. They range from sites that have tech and gaming products to popular fashion brands and even food delivery. Imagine it. Picture it. You're shopping. You're shopping on one of your favorite sites. When you check out, the Honey button drops down and all you have to do is click Apply Coupons. Wait a few seconds as Honey searches for coupons it can find for that site. And if Honey finds a working coupon, you'll watch the price drop. Honey has found its over 17 million members, over $2 billion in savings. Ah, what did Honey save me money on? What didn't it save me money on? I'm not going to cover that part. I bought an inner tube because I was house-sitting for my brother and sister-in-law, and I broke their inner tube in the pool because it was meant for children and not for Daniels. So I had to quickly buy them a replacement inner tube, and I went online, and I used the Honey promo code on a website to save money on it, and it saved me $3 on that inner tube. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out on free savings. It's literally free and installs in a few seconds. And by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this podcast, doing me a solid. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/QQ. That's joinhoney.com/QQ.
Our next question is from Dummy G. Dummy G says, we actually have the full name. Should I do the whole name here or just Dummy G?
Yeah, I'd like to hear you pronounce that last name.
Okay. Next, we have one from Dummy G. Or at Dominic M. Gihan. Gihan. Well, how would you do it, Dan? Gihan.
I think Gihan, yeah.
Gihan. Yeah, like Gihan? Ian, but with a G.
Yeah.
Okay. He asks, is Jackson being a good boy today? Well, Dominic, I don't know because I haven't seen Jackson in years. So there's no conceivable way that I would actually know that. If you listen to the podcast, you know that Daniel and I are on opposite coasts. I don't go to New York. I'm weighed down by the pandemic and children. I can't get on an airplane. So how on earth would I know how Jackson is?
You fucking idiot. That was a Dominic, not you.
Oh, okay.
Jackson is being a good boy today. When I was just traveling, I was in LA and I use a kennel service that I put him in, and it's always very funny. They text me updates every morning that is like, he's eating all his food, he slept great, and he's playing with his friends. And I appreciate those texts very much. But I also, what I love more than anything else is that this company posts pictures of the dogs that are in their care on Instagram every day. And Jackson famously hates getting his picture taken and makes it so difficult. So every time I log on to Instagram to check this company's account, it just tickles me that they either don't have a picture of him or they get like a picture where he's clearly in the middle of walking out of frame. I love that he is frustrating whatever fucking employee is tasked with taking pictures of all these dogs every day. And it's just like, can you just you're such a good boy. You know how to sit. You're behaving the whole day and you're staying in one place. As soon as I take a camera out, I just need to take a picture of you, and now you're leaving and you're trying to get like under the camera and away from the camera. Just please settle for this picture. I love that Jackson's not doing it and making someone's day harder.
Yeah. That's nice. Do you ever when you work, just like if you have like a really tough day coming up, do you ever put him in a doggy daycare?
No.
Okay.
I think it's important, especially if I'm working, I like forcing myself to walk outside and take him with me. And
That's a good
one. Like that structure is important to me.
Yeah. I guess it's not. I think about that with my children. At the beginning of the pandemic, I had both of them home every day, all the time, and just like thinking of ways to keep these kids entertained and doing things, and how distracting that was from work, and how liberating it was when all of a sudden I had somebody to take care of my daughter, and then also sending my son to preschool. It was just like, oh my God, I'm just allowed to do this? I'm just allowed to send my kids away? This is wonderful. And I didn't know if you'd get the same sort of exhilarating rush from sending your dog away, but I guess it's different. Your dog just sleeps most of the time.
And I also, I always think that I'm going to really enjoy not being tethered to him and his schedule of bathroom and food. But then I end up missing him. Like when I was in LA recently and I wake up in the morning, I'm so accustomed to the ritual of taking him out in the morning that when I don't have that, it's for a brief depressing second. It's just like, why am I awake? 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm not in charge of anything right now. No one expects me to be anywhere. No one is counting on me for anything. Yeah. I guess I could just sleep again.
Yeah, I guess it would be, once you have the responsibility and then you don't, it'd be very easy to spin out.
Yeah.
You see those people like go to bachelor parties when anyone with a new baby at a bachelor party is fucking trouble. Like that guy is going to be the real problem that night because this is like his one chance to let loose. And he's just like, I could do anything. I'm free. Yeah. And then he's going to do it all. And that's going to be a problem.
You suddenly forget what you even enjoy about going out. Like, we could get, what did I used to do? Cocaine? Strippers?
No, you didn't do any of those things.
No, we're at a nice restaurant. You just got to cool it. I want to get in a fight tonight.
Stop, man. Stop. All right. This next one is from Jared Flacker. Jared Flacker asks, nope, sorry. This next one is from Jerf. A Jerf type. Yeah. Jerf asks, Dan, specifically, when you think of New Jersey in regards to food, what comes to mind? First of all, it's Soren. God, it's like these people don't even listen to the podcast. Second of all, why the fuck would I care about New Jersey? I don't live there. I've been there once, a couple times when I was a kid to Ocean City. But if I had to answer the question, it's fat sandwiches all the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, sandwiches with fries in them. I feel like that was born in New Jersey.
It was. It was born at Rutgers.
Was it? At your college, your old stomping grounds, they created the fat sandwich. Do you think anything that you did in your life might have influenced the creation of the fat sandwich? Because that's recent.
No, it was before my time. Oh. So I don't think I had anything to do with it. And the way the legend goes is a guy was at a pizza shop and couldn't decide what he wanted. And so he just asked the pizza professionals to put, hey, can I just get like chicken fingers and french fries and bacon and this other ingredient? Can you just like put that all on a sandwich? And the pizza place was like, sure, $7. And then multiple people in the restaurant were like, I'm going to have that too. I want that exact thing.
Yeah.
That's how the legend goes. The guy's name was Daryl and they called it a Fat Daryl. And then this sandwich institution was born.
The fat sandwich took off. It's infiltrated fast food at this point. Jack in the Box does basically a fat sandwich.
Do they really?
Yeah, they do. They've got their midnight munchie meals and it's just like this toxic menu of weird ass shit. And some they rotate stuff in and out, but for a while they were doing french fries and gravy on a burger.
Oh. I have from time to time tried to recreate my own fat sandwich at home.
Yeah.
Almost nothing sadder than doing that.
It must be really also that they when it just doesn't work out, like that your ratios are off, because then you're eating a 2,000 calorie thing and you don't even like it. You're just like, well, I made it.
I really, when you're cooking it yourself, you're really confronted with the amount of different ingredients you're working with, and it's very unpleasant. I'm just like quickly cooking a meat patty and also like keeping my eye on some fried chicken happening. Like this isn't what dinner is normally like. Yeah. I'm not supposed to see how this happens.
Oh, I'm burning my
just get like
fries.
My sandwich.
Yeah. Yep. I don't think I would ever try that. But I do like the very idea of a fat sandwich is very, I like that a lot.
When I think of Jersey, I think of pizza a whole lot because it has my favorite pizza in the world.
Mac and Manco's.
And I think about that. I think about Giuseppe's Pizza, which is pizza where I grew up. And they're very good and just like my... what I think pizza should be. like a very easy, simple slice of pizza. I also think about bizarre regional food wars. Like there's a long-standing debate of whether you call it pork roll or Taylor ham, and people are very passionate about it. And there's food loyalties for Wawa sandwiches versus Wawa hoagies versus Subway sandwiches elsewhere in the state. And it all felt very tedious to me. I think growing up in central New Jersey, where you're kept out of a lot of these pointless regional fights, and then you go to South Jersey, like I did for a year for college, and then North Jersey for the rest of college, and then you're suddenly exposed to all these regional food brand loyalties. It's like, just get a fucking life. It's something that it's like a very specific reality for central New Jerseyans to be confronted with someone being like, is it pork roll or Taylor ham? I'm like, I don't want to get involved. This is
right.
That's a you fight. I'm not interested in being part of this.
I have a question about New Jersey cuisine for you, Daniel. There was an article in Slate a while back, like a few years ago, actually, I think. But they did an article that was about the difference between sauce and gravy. And within even New Jersey, there's like a real discrepancy between the people who call the sauce that you put on ordinary pasta, just like a marinara sauce, whether you call that sauce or you call it gravy. And like people like live and die on these hills. When you were growing up, did you call it sauce or did you call it gravy?
We called it sauce.
Okay. Gravy, anyone in your world, like anyone in your peripherals even like call it gravy?
Yes. And I don't know if it was a Jersey thing or an Italian thing, because I'm part Italian and I took Italian in high school. And I definitely, it's the same thing with people having strong opinions on Wawa hoagies or Taylor ham versus pork roll. I remember people having very strong opinions on whether you call it gravy or sauce. And I remember thinking the whole debate was tedious and pointless. To me, very clearly and simply, gravy is brown, yeah, and sauce is the other stuff for pasta.
Yeah, and the conversation should go, I call it sauce. I don't call it gravy because I grew up calling it sauce and that's all I knew. And then the debate's over because it's just about like, no, this is just what we called it in my family. And it doesn't like, now you also have to call it that because that's what we called it that.
Right. You don't need to turn everything into an opportunity to be a gatekeeper.
Yeah. I didn't understand that at all. It seemed like people were ready to die on those hills all over New Jersey when I read that article. And I was like, this seems crazy, right?
One New Jersey hill that I was really willing to die on years and years ago was about Italian pronunciation of things. I'm sure you've heard the stereotype of this, where it's a mozzarella, prosciutto, manicotti, you know, I was in school told that's how Italians speak, that we drop the real Italians will drop the last vowel off a lot of these common Italian words. And, that's fully how I learned Italian. And, kept believing that to be true for most of my life. I met a person in Los Angeles, this guy Gil, who was a producer that we both knew, and he was like, "No, they don't. You're not really supposed to say mozzarella. It's mozzarella and bruschetta and or bruschetta and all these things." And I was like, "When I learned Italian, this is what they taught us, and that's what I'm going to die on." He's like, "Okay, well, I lived in Italy for a number of years, and I spoke with Italians, and they don't do that." And it wasn't until years later that I learned that this type of pronunciation is very common specifically to a subsection of people in New Jersey, because a lot of the God help my ancestors, a lot of Italy's poorest and dumbest people settled in New Jersey, and that's how they talked.
Yeah.
And that like spread out like this. It was essentially like, I don't want to throw any one region of America under the bus or anything like that. But if people with a very specific accent and a particularly uneducated background, if all of those people went somewhere else and settled and then taught everyone to speak like they spoke, that's what happened with Italians in New Jersey. We all learned the language from the dumbest pocket of Italy. Just these people who were speaking wrong, then settled in Jersey and taught us all how to talk. And it's this very specific, fun cultural quirk that for a while I was like, this is how real Italians talk. And then I learned, oh no, this is how like uneducated Italians in New Jersey talk.
This is how the dumbest colonizers talk.
Yes.
Perfect. I do have one hot take from New Jersey cuisine, and that is that tasty cakes suck. I've had
tasty cakes. That's a brand of snack cakes. What are you talking about?
Yeah, brand of snack cakes that is specific to the East Coast. I think the only place I've ever had it is in New Jersey. I guess Philly maybe too. But tasty cakes are.
But I mean that's such a large umbrella.
Yeah, but I mean like I'm saying I haven't had a tasty cake that's I've been like, oh, I get it now. I hear people like my mom grew up in West Philadelphia, born and raised on the playground. And she would say, as I was growing up, she'd be like, oh, we're going to New Jersey. The first thing I'm going to do is get some tasty cakes. And she would get the chocolate and peanut butter ones that have like real cake inside of them. And, I've tried lots of different tasty cakes. I feel like they all just kind of suck. There's nothing exciting about them.
I'm looking at pictures of them now and I don't love what I'm seeing. which brand was,
the one that my mom liked?
No. Where did Yodels come from?
Oh. Is that Hostess?
Yodels. Drake's. Drake's made Yodels.
Oh, it's Drake's. Okay.
Hostess had Ho-Ho's.
That's right. And Swiss Rolls. No, that was... Oh, damn it. That's that one with the little girl on it.
Yeah. I feel like I remember Yodels not being a thing in California.
No, they're not. This is the first time seeing a yodel, but it is basically just a Swiss roll. Oh, no, is there no cake in it? Is it just like a frosting and two different types of frosting?
Yeah, it's just frosting and chocolate.
Okay. Well, what I was blown away by with the tasty cakes is that there's like real cake inside of them, but it's like bad cake. So it's just like some bread inside your candy.
Yeah.
I didn't care for that.
I had such an affection for yodels that it was... definitely irresponsible. Like as soon as we used to, back in the day, when you wanted lunch at school, you would hand in a lunch ticket that your parents paid for, and then you hand in this paper ticket, and then you get your lunch. But then in middle school, my parents started giving me $2 for lunch every day. And as soon as I had cash in hand and autonomy over my food decisions, I was blowing the entire $2 on yodels.
Yeah.
And I would eat $2 worth of yodels for lunch every single day. And this came to a head when I think either between 6th and 7th or 7th and 8th grade, they jacked up the prices on yodels over the summer from 25 cents to 35 cents. And I complained about it at home. It's like, they fucking jacked up these prices on yodels. It's 35 cents now. That doesn't evenly split with the $2 that I'm given for lunch. I have all this extra change at the end of my day that doesn't equal a full yodel. I'm furious about this. And my mom was just like, I don't think you should be getting that many yodels a day. We found a new problem to be mad at.
Yeah. I think that's pretty common for kids to do that kind of thing. I remember eating a lot of oatmeal cookies with the frosting centers. They have a oatmeal cookie sandwich with frosting in the middle from lunch. And then also, I found out that on Wednesdays, the city market, which is the grocery store where I grew up, had they're like unloading all their donuts. They just, like, whatever donuts they've made the rest of the week that were now going stale, they'd be like, all right, these are just 10 cents. And so if I could scrape together enough change, I could get, as soon as I got out of school, I would go get like roughly like 14 donuts and just sit there and eat them out in the park.
Have you had a donut recently?
Yeah. I do a thing sometimes when I go during COVID, when I would go to the grocery store in the middle of the night so that I wouldn't encounter anybody. I would treat myself every once in a while by getting a profiterole, or I would get a donut with chocolate frosting. And then I would walk home eating it and just like feel my teeth hurt.
Yeah, donuts are not part of my regular rotation of fish, meat, and gummy bears. And when I was house sitting for my brother and sister-in-law, her brother came to visit one day with his son so they could use the pool. And I was like, well, I should be a good host and get donuts because they're coming over in the morning. So I got a bunch of donuts, and that was the first time I'd purchased and like eaten a donut in years. And I was disgusted by it. I can't even tell you how unpleasant that was. Cause it shouldn't be a revelation, but there's just so much sugar. I'm just sitting there like, I'm going to have one of these donuts. Why not? And just like eating like morning cake. It's disgusting. I was ashamed and so unhappy and just like felt my teeth dying and felt the like, I knew where that donut was going to go on my body, and I was unhappy about that. Yeah. And I couldn't fathom the idea of donuts being a regular part of anyone's life, even though I knew that like donuts used to be a thing that I would get and eat and enjoy.
Yeah, there for a long time when we would do table reads, whoever's table read it was would bring in donuts that morning, and I would go and partake in a donut and think nothing of it. But you're right. Like when I would eat these last few nights when I've gone to the grocery store and I'm eating a donut on the way home, I'm thinking, oh, this is tough to get through.
Yeah, there's like frosting on it and sprinkles, and I'm like, this is undignified.
Whose idea was this? You know, also we have we have a Krispy Kreme here in Los Angeles, and I find those donuts are tough to eat. Because they really coat those in like a glaze. Yeah. And then on top of that, sometimes they'll also put like chocolate over the top.
They don't even give you a chance to have like the standard.
There's no plain.
Dusty donuts. Yeah. They're it comes factory made, dipped in whatever that Krispy Kreme goo is.
Yes. They glaze it in those weird machines that you get to watch. And then on top, that's the base. And after that, you can add whatever you want, sprinkles and chocolate and powdered sugar and stuff. But you're no matter what, you're getting that weird sugary glaze. And it's just rough. It's tough to even get through one of those. Hey, it's summertime. Hot, short days, long, sweaty nights, the changing of the equinox. Those are Sublime lyrics, my friends, from back in the day. Summer's here and the living's easy.
Happy 25th anniversary to Sublime.
Or it's not so easy if you've got swamp ass. Gosh, the worst thing about summer. Well, I'm going to go with like top 25 worst things about summer is you get that little rivulet of sweat that just goes right down your back and it just finds the lowest point, and it's like a river through a canyon. How will you stay on top of your sweaty bottom? Try a refreshing spray from Hello Tushy Bidet. There are a lot of good things about heading into the warmer weather, but a butt crack dripping with hot summer sweat, it's not one of them. So say goodbye to swamp ass and say hello to wet clean ass with Hello Tushy. So sometimes, you know, you're sitting there at like, let's say you went to a baseball game and you're concerned that the outside of your pants might be showing some of the sweat, might be betraying you, that you're going to stand up any second and look down and see a little bit of those moisture beads on your seat and just be like, oh man, how come nobody else is dealing with this? Well, they probably are, my friend. But the difference is that your butt's dirty and theirs is clean because they've got a Hello Tushy. There's a monster growing in your pants this summer called swamp ass, but the beast has a weakness, a Hello Tushy bidet. So keep your crack clean all summer long with a brand new Hello Tushy 3.0 modern bidet attachment. It's stylish, it's eco-friendly, and it's like a refreshing little shower for your butt. Hello Tushy 3.0 cleans soggy butts like a champ, but it doesn't stop there. It also cleans itself. It's got the smart spray, automatic self-cleaning nozzle. Now that's not going to be on your Tushy 2.0, so don't even try it. The 3.0 is the only one that's got it. If there's any downside, it's that it makes doing your business in places that don't have a Hello Tushy very unpleasant. You got to go back and use leaves like a caveman, or if they have it, toilet paper, I guess. No one wants to work up a sweat in 100 degree heat. That's why the Hello Tushy bidet attaches to your existing toilet with no electricity or extra plumbing needed. And Hello Tushy cuts toilet paper use by 80%. If it's cutting toilet paper use by 80%, imagine what it will do to your leaf use. It pays for itself in a few months. Plus, Hello Tushy got your ass covered with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty. And if you've already got a Hello Tushy on your pot, give the 3.0 model a try. Join the millions of happy Hello Tushy customers right now and have a clean butt with every flush. Defeat swamp ass. Go to HelloTushy.com/QQ to get 10% off plus free shipping. This is a special offer to our listeners at HelloTushy.com/QQ for 10% off. HelloTushy.com/QQ. Okay, we can move on here. This question is from Jared Flacker.
I'm glad you're moving us on, because in that silence, I was finding room to ask, what is this podcast? What are we doing? Who is this for?
I don't know. It's best not to think about it.
two guys who aren't young anymore complaining about donuts.
Complaining about trying to remember who makes ho-hos and who makes Drake's fucking chocolate Swiss rolls.
It's a show where two comedy writers ask each other questions like, when was the last time you had a donut? God almighty.
All right, we're moving on. Jared Flacker says, what do you think of the state of online comedy writing these days? Oh, that's a heavier question than I thought I was. I came into that a little hot. Is this the day of websites dedicated to comedy writing? Is the day of websites dedicated to comedy writing past? It seems to me like I just have to scroll through the detritus. Is that the right?
Detritus.
Detritus. Is that really how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Shit. I think I've only ever read that word.
I only know that because it is famously used as a lyric in the Beetlejuice musical.
Oh, okay.
We're more than detritus, we're finally alive. Carrie Butler for the win. Go on, Soren.
It seems to me like I have just I just have to scroll through the detritus of Twitter and Reddit until I find something that's find something that someone might consider funny. Basically, the question is online comedy as a viable career, is that over?
As a viable career, it might be, which is a bummer. I think there was a panel at Stanley's Comic-Con, kamikaze thing in LA years ago, with it featured Heather Ann Campbell, who was a fantastic writer, and Cracked still existed as a website at the time, but she could already see the writing on the walls that, like, comedy writing as an online institution was disappearing, and she thought the funniest people online at the time were making memes. It was an idea that terrified and confused me at the time, but I do think that's probably true, that, like, funny people didn't stop existing, but there's less of an audience for 2,000 word articles.
Yeah.
About whatever comedy bullshit topic we wanted to make. But meanwhile, some of the funniest people are just, like, really good at Twitter. Brothy Gupta is a person I follow on Twitter. She's now a Simpsons writer. But she is, like, I find her tweets as enjoyable as some of the finest pieces of long form content we had back in the day. I don't think it's a bad sign for, like, comedy writers that there are fewer and fewer opportunities to make a living doing this, but I don't think it's a bad sign of, like, the state of comedy that I'm enjoying funny people on Twitter who are making just, like, really good tweets or really funny memes.
I like the wording of this question, despite the fact that he embarrassed me by putting a word in there that I don't know how to pronounce. But I think that so he's not phrasing it as, is comedy dead online? Like, is there no more? Are there no more funny nights to take the helm? It's because it's not. I mean, there was always going to be funny people, and they're just doing something different now. Long form isn't really the thing that's going to. Nobody's doing it because it's hard, and it's the reward isn't there anymore. Like, the incentive to do something that big is not really there. So, like, you can even see it. McSweeney's articles, they're getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And Onion, they're going to survive on their titles alone, but I mean, those articles are shorter and shorter and shorter, and it's because nobody's got the patience, I guess, to stick around for that long with one article, and that's fine. That's just, like, the nature of things changing.
I do personally wish there were more, this is going to sound like a bit, websites. I there aren't like too many great websites, and I think the reason is that I don't think people consume the internet the same way that I do. I think a lot of it is phone based and a lot of it is scroll based, and you're just like, it's like tailor made for Facebook, for Twitter, Instagram, and yeah, Facebook, and just like, I want an endless cycle of things, little bits and pieces of things, yeah. Just titles that I can consume. That's not how I consume internet content. I still am living a very like 2006, 2007 life where I wake up in the morning and I like go to websites. I fully sit in front of my computer with coffee and I check The Ringer and I check Vulture and a few other sites to see like what are the long form articles that have been written so I can do my daily reading of things. And I just don't think websites like that really exist much anymore, because I think I'm the only one who still engages with the internet that way.
I think you are too. I've certainly moved on. I get it. I just want that feed. I just want like collections of stuff to be force fed into me. But I think there are some people still doing it and doing it successfully. I think that 1-900 Hot Dog is still really great.
Hell yeah.
That's Robert Brockway and Sean Baby, Sean Riley. They're doing an excellent job of keeping long form comedy alive. And it couldn't be anybody else, right? Like, Sean Baby and Brockway were there at basically the beginning of internet comedy.
Right.
And they're like, no, look, trust me, this is funny. This is still funny. And everyone has to begrudgingly agree, no, you're right. If I stick around for this, I do enjoy it. And so they pick up this fan base that just keeps growing and growing.
Yeah, they've been doing it very successfully. I'm very happy for them because we know them as people, and I like to see them do well. I'm also happy that they're is still an audience for well-written 3,000 word comedy pieces that just like long form content about whatever these two guys thinks is funny, and Lydia Bug, and they've got a lot of great guest writers that yes. pop in from time to time too.
Yeah.
So that's a good website.
There's one. One's still doing it. I mean, I still enjoy McSweeney's. I will go directly to McSweeney's and see what they've got on tap for me.
Yeah. I think now that there's been like distance between Cracked and the present, it's interesting to me to think about it as a very strange fluke, a phenomenon, instead of like the direction that the industry was going. Because for a while I thought like, writing comedy on the internet, that's going to be a career for everyone forever. And no, it was like this, like we happened to live in this during this very strange time where in the early 2000s, a bunch of companies believed that internet comedy websites was a viable economic decision.
Yeah.
And we just happened to be in the right place at the right time where our very specific skill sets matched what the market wanted. And it's cool to have been a part of a thing that is, I guess, mostly gone now.
Yeah, it is. It was great. It was so much fun. And we did get very lucky to build enough of a career there that then we could do a podcast where we ask each other if we've ever had donuts. All right. This next one is from Scott L. Barton. What do you think that middle name is? L. Lee?
Man.
Luther.
No.
Okay.
Luther? Luke? Lucas?
Oh, a Lucas.
Leonard? What if it's Leonard? Leonard sounds like it could be a family name.
And I honestly, if it was Lucas, I think Scott would go Scott Lucas Barton. He'd be he'd be Lucas forward. But Leonard, you might shy away from. Okay. Yeah, he says, Nacho or Cool Ranch Doritos? That's a fair question.
A true, very stupid thing that I did?
That you buy Doritos every single day? Do you buy Cool Ranch Doritos and then eat them in the middle of the night?
No.
Okay.
I do. That is famously the only other snack that's not gummy bears that I will occasionally get. But when I was in LA recently, I got myself some Doritos, and I was shopping downtown, which I'm never in downtown, and my brain is a fucking scrambled egg, and I just see a bag of Doritos that is labeled Spicy Ranch, and instead of doing just like a base level of investigation, my brain went, I guess that's what they're calling Cool Ranch now. And so I bought it thinking it was Cool Ranch. And Soren, it's not. It's a totally different chip. It's altogether spicier. And as I'm eating it, I'm thinking, they should have labeled this. And they did. I'm the only one who has this very specific problem that I see Spicy Ranch, assume the package is wrong.
Yeah.
And they mean Cool Ranch, and then get it, and then get disappointed when I'm home eating it.
I just think the whole chip industry needs to take a little break from trying to make spicy combinations happen.
Sure.
I'm really sick of it. They're the spicy queso, the spicy nacho, the jalapeno and barbecue, or like all the, just cool it on the heat.
Yeah. But to answer the question, Cool Ranch all day, and in fact, if I will never, certainly never buy the nacho cheese Doritos. And if they're like an available snack somewhere, I just won't eat them. Even if I'm hungry, I'm not going to eat them.
I want it. It's so pedestrian. Nacho Doritos are beneath me.
Cool Ranch is so good. Yeah. And I wish I could just eat like a soft ball of their seasoning.
Well, lucky for you, occasionally there is one at the bottom of the bag.
Yeah, if you work hard.
You'll get one of those, like a marble of just the flavoring and the monosodium glutamate, and you can just eat that.
I do want them to one day throw health concerns out the window and just be like, we did it. We made a cake of the seasoning. And you can get it. It's bad for you, but you can get it. There's no law against it. Just a solid moist brick of Cool Ranch Dorito seasoning that I slice into every morning.
Mm. There's a weird thing with Doritos I've noticed where usually you get one, a pack, and they're kind of like, they've got the big bubbles in them, they're airy, they're good. And then occasionally you get a bag of Doritos that's, every single chip is flat as Kansas. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where there's like
no
bubbling to it at all, and the chip's a little bit harder. It's like if I went into my kitchen right now with a corn tortilla and just threw it on the in a fryer.
I haven't experienced this though.
Oh, well then fuck me. But yeah, occasionally I get a bag and they're just like, there's just something different about them. They're wrong. They're like, they're every single one of them is completely flat, and they don't have the airiness and without that texture. It's just the Dorito's not worth it, but certainly the nacho Dorito is never worth it.
Garbage. Can I tell you what I really love is that it seems like, and I've done no research into this, it seems like other chip companies have tremendous amounts of respect for Cool Ranch as a brand identity, because no one else is even trying to do it. You're never going to see Ruffles is like, we have salt and vinegar and sour cream and onion and this Cool Ranch adjacent thing. No, they're not even trying it. They know who owns that space. And I really like that, the deference that other chip companies show Cool Ranch.
I didn't even think about that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Nobody else is doing it. It's the only one in the game. I wonder if ranch maybe that's trademarked, but they're not even trying to do like a buttermilk.
No.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, good for them.
This podcast sucks.
No, it doesn't. Here's what I was thinking, Dan. Here's what I was thinking to make myself feel better. I used to do a radio show occasionally. I would call into it on behalf of Cracked. And it was like a zoo-hour radio show. It was called Church of Laszlo.
And oh, yeah, that's right.
It is in St. Louis. They're a good show. I like them a lot, and that's why I would call in every week. But early on when I would call into them, they'd put me on hold for a while, and I'd sort of just listen to the show. And there were like these long silences that I would hear, these just like this dead air. And then occasionally, like I would be talking to them, and one of them, I just all of a sudden hear him eating. And I would be like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm having my lunch. And then I would have to pull back and say, is this a real radio show? And they would assure me that, yeah, it was. But I think it's because you and I don't listen to anything else that we don't know, that this is fine. We're doing fine.
I guess. I mean, we're definitely not going to stop doing it or anything like that, but I'm just so shocked that this is what I'm like. That if you put me in, you park me in front of a microphone and you tell me that people are listening to what I say, and then I will, like, enthusiastically talk about the respect that I think Ruffles has for Doritos. That's what I do when I have total freedom. And that's what I, like, that's what I'm like. It sucks.
I did a whole ad for Roundels. I did 15 minutes for Roundels that was completely free for them. All right. This is one last here one. Well, one last here one. Are you ready for it?
I am.
This is from Faithy. If you have an entire day to yourself with no plans, responsibilities, or obligations, how would you hope to spend it to make it your idea of the perfect day? I've talked about this a little bit. I've talked about my Father's Days here.
Yeah. I'm going to engage with the question and answer it the way that I think the questioner wants. But at a base level, I disagree with the question because I love plans and responsibility and obligations. I do, like, sincerely love building out my daily to-do list and my calendar and, like, having things to do. So, like, even to get to the heart of this question involves the temporary removal of Jackson, for example, because he is an obligation. And we've already covered on this episode that when he's not around, I don't like that lack of structure and purpose.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what she's asking. If I wake up and there's no Jackson and I don't have to go to work, I'm assuming my bills are paid and my apartment is clean.
I would like a weird place to start from.
Because I like cleaning, so I'm trying to think of a perfect day, and a perfect day really involves it's not a lazy day. It involves the accomplishment of a number of tasks.
Oh no, you're so small. You're so small-minded.
I was telling you not in this episode about a time that I was working out with a friend when I was in Los Angeles that we had a plan to meet up at the Santa Monica Stairs. That's something like 170 steps that people just, like, go up and down to work out. It was 2 miles from my Airbnb, so I ran the 2 miles to get there, and then she called right as I was getting there saying that she was going to be late, so I turned 2 miles into 3.1 miles and ran a 5K before the steps, and I was thrilled because I was thinking on my run, 2 miles is not a distance that I ever do. It's very short for a daily run. I'm going to have to do something later to boost this up, and I was so jazzed that I had the opportunity to turn it into a 5K before the steps. And all of this was happening before, like, 7:30 in the morning. And it was amazing to me, crossing off these things on my list. So I think a perfect day for me would involve a lot of stuff crossed off list. I can run early. I can work out somewhere. I can do laundry. It sucks. It sounds like very, like, very boring, but, like, my apartment would be so clean, or I would organize something new in my apartment. Just, like, been meaning to change up my cabinets and turn one of them into, like, a full coffee station instead of just, like, you know, whatever's in there currently. I want to get little baskets and put sugar packets in the baskets and put little stirrers in the baskets and then have, like, a nice looking coffee station. I'm building a perfect day of just, like, a Target run and cleaning my apartment.
Yeah, it's just a to-do list.
Yeah.
Your perfect day is checking off every box on a to-do list.
Yeah. It's not waking up and going to the beach and, like, sitting on the beach all day. No disrespect to anyone who does that.
Yeah. No, but I don't think I want to do that either.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be mine. I'm not going to go sit by a pool even. I don't even get that as a thing. I don't want to, like, being in the sun that long. But this is sort of a catch-22, but I would want somewhere within my day for a spontaneous sport to break out where, like, everyone's like, should we play a game? Like, of whatever. like some friends, we're all together. Maybe we all go see a movie together. One of my favorite memories of like just like a fun day, and I didn't even expect it to be so great, was you and Nick Mundy and a bunch of other people. We all went, I think Truly was there. We all went and saw White House Down.
Hell yeah. And no, then, wait, didn't we do, am I accurately remembering a movie where you needed to go to a prison in space to save the president's daughter?
Yeah, that was a real movie, but that's not the one I'm thinking of. But yes,
we did not see that together.
Yes, we did. That's not the one. I think they break a man out of prison to send him to another prison in space. I can't remember, but this one was White House Down, and then we watched this movie, and then we all just like went to a little bar afterwards and just riffed on the movie, just like talked about it, and it was so much fun, and everybody was very funny, and it was good. And then what I would have happen after that is that everyone would just be like, should we like play a game of basketball, or like should we like what if we just all played Ultimate Frisbee right now, like at Michael's birthday one year. Michael really badly wanted us to all come over and watch Freakazoid all day, and we instead
we ruined his birthday and made a much more fun birthday for everyone involved except him.
And instead, everyone came, watched one episode of Freakazoid, and then went, should we play something? And I was like, yes. And so we all just went out to this field and played three different games. I think we played some basketball, and we played some Ultimate Frisbee, and we might have even had a football. I can't remember. But
yeah,
the idea of spontaneous sport breaking out really appeals to me. And then, I mean, I don't know how to squeeze it in, but I would love to shoot something, like be on set for something, a real set where I'm only there. I know everything. Like I already know my lines. I know everything. And it's going to be good. I like the thing that we're shooting, and it's short, and I get to sit there for a little while and people just tell me what to do. There's food and all kinds of food there for me. There's Dr. Pepper because the AD knows I like it. And then the rest of the day is just somebody telling me what to do. And then I do it. And then a bunch of people go, that was really good. And they all tell me what a good boy I am, and because I did the thing that they liked, and I think that would be a lot of fun.
I could see that being fun for you. I think if there was one other thing, I would like to do some kind of performance. I don't know if it would be like playing with one of my rock and roll bands, or doing stand up, or just something where I can like be performative. To the sounds of applause and laughter.
Right. But to have something locked in beforehand, I mean, it ruins your whole day when like you're trying out a new set and you haven't thought, like, you're like, well, I don't even know if this works yet. And you're just thinking about it the whole time. If you've got something that's locked in, you know, is good, or it's a smaller group of people that you don't mind experimenting in front of. That's why I thought like being on set would be fun, because when we get out there to shoot it, You're going to try some shit. Like, you're going to try some funny stuff out there. And when it works, like, it's so clear it works immediately from the people around you. And that feels really good.
This is something... There's a daydream that I revisit frequently, which is... It's very cowardly that I aspire to this specific situation. But in this situation, it's karaoke. And I am around a bunch of my co-workers and people who know me in this iteration of my life, the present, and I am against my will brought in to sing something. So there's no stakes of me saying like, I think I'm a good singer, so I'm gonna sing for you now. It's someone is up there and they're like, I want to sing Light My Candle from Rent, but I don't have anyone to be my Roger. Does anyone know the lyrics? And I'll be like, I guess I'll do it. And so it's so low stakes, and that everyone is very generous when it turns out I'm a decent enough singer to pull this thing off. And they're all really happy for me, and especially its coworkers, and like, you could sing this whole time? That's great.
Oh, that's a very indulgent and satisfying fantasy.
Yeah.
I would love that. Occasionally you'll go to karaoke.
Just someone on a plane being like, there's a disaster. Does anyone here know how to sing Alex Brightman's part from a Documentary Now episode about the co-op? I'm like, I guess if it saves the plane.
Get out of my way. Yeah. you know what? It's like sometimes you go to karaoke with somebody who's very bossy and they're like, no, you're not doing that. You're going to sing Lightning Crashes by Live. And you're like, Okay. Or like they just like pick songs for you.
No one should sing the word placenta to a group of strangers.
Including live. I think that you get those people who just tell you what you're going to sing. And if you can nail the song in that circumstance, you have them for life.
Good God. If fate had determined I needed to sing Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On versus me choosing to sing that song, it's a night and day difference.
It's huge. It's like,
I will reluctantly do my best on this song. And then when it's good and no one needs to know that I've been practicing that song for decades, it's a miracle. It's magic.
Yeah. It's pure magic. Okay, I like that fantasy. I'm going to have that be my best day, and I'm a good singer in that circumstance as well. Which is a tall order for me. Okay, well, we're nearing the end of our show, Dan, but it is time for what's become a fan favorite segment on the show. Mostly because I anticipated a lot of sports fans, but from the ringing endorsements that I've gotten and all the advertisers knocking down our door now, everybody's saying it's the political side of these that they really enjoy. They love having Jeff Millman on the podcast, knowing that he's a friend of the podcast, and just like politics heads from all over the world. I think in DC, like they break Congress every once in a while when a new episode drops just to hear this part.
Okay.
So he's going to do another sports roundup for us.
Okay. So this is again, to set it up, it's a person who works in the mayor's office in Los Angeles doing a sports roundup for our podcast. And he's going to talk about the world of sports currently.
I mean, I talked to him and he got silent for a while. And the call was a little frosty when I said that, when I gave him any sort of criticism at all. So I don't totally know what he's done here, but we'll see.
Okay, because the last two versions of this skewed towards the personal, I would say.
Yeah, I asked him to steer clear of that. I said, no more. I mean, I know I've obviously there's a lot of great moments in sports history that I was responsible for, but that we should just try and steer clear of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Straight from the Los Angeles mayor's office, it's time for the QQ Weekly Sports Roundup.
Hello, I'm Jeff Millman, Chief Strategist for the Los Angeles Mayor's Office, and this is your weekly quick question sports roundup. 15 years ago today, a secluded beach in Rosarito, Mexico, saw one of the greatest impromptu games of touch football ever played. The reason for its greatness? The spectacular plays, the unprecedented agility, and the spirited sportsmanship exhibited by one man, Soren Bowie. Where other players trudged through the loose sand, Soren seemed to float above it all, sweatless and yet still glistening, likely from all the sunscreen he uses as he burns easily. Soren combined three touchdowns on offense and two pick sixes on defense, tearing apart the competition of private school losers and demoralizing them so thoroughly that they never found their confidence ever again. Well, until they started their careers in private equity. On this day, Soren dominated the game and cemented his place as the beach football legend of Baja. I know, because I was there and I was on his team. This concludes your weekly sports roundup. Back to you, Soren and Daniel.
I'm at a loss.
Not even a glancing attempt to talk about any other sport.
Well,
in past iterations of this, he has at least winked at the idea of this being a sports update that was not entirely centered around a thing you did over a decade ago.
I'm as mad as you.
But this time he went straight into it.
And it was even further back. It was 16 years ago. That's unconscionable. I think maybe he's upset and this is like some sort of revenge. I don't know. But wow, I would say good revenge.
You know what makes me sad for you?
What's that?
It's his list of accolades for you. One of them was sportsmanship.
Uh-huh.
That's a parent talking, man. That's good hustle.
I think it's underrated, honestly. I think that in the on the day when you're playing the sport, like there should be an undercurrent of sportsmanship, and it's up to somebody to hold that up to a certain bar. And if you fall below it, like it's all the wheels come off. You've been bowling with people before, and when they just like don't even know it's their turn, or they're like their foot's not really in the game, that pisses you off. It makes you angry. There's like a sense of sportsmanship that everybody has to adhere to for it all to work. And it just sounds like this guy, I can't remember who he said, but this sounds like this guy was just the glue.
I also didn't like unprecedented agility. Surely uh-huh. there was precedent.
Not in Baja.
All right. And it's, what position did you play?
A little everything. So I was QB for some of it, but really my crowning achievements were my pick sixes as a cornerback.
Okay.
But I was, you know, I was a receiver for some of it, and never really played running back. That's not really my style. There's not a lot of pageantry to be had at running back. It's just sort of like a grind position, and it's not sexy. So I stayed away from that. Blocking too. Not a thing I'm really... I would say I'm not good at it, but I would just be being modest. It's really that I don't want to do it.
I feel like I'm the same level of sad for you as I am every time I hear Ice Cube's song about a good day. When he talks about playing pickup basketball and how the other week he messed around and got a triple-double. It's like, in pickup basketball, who's keeping track of those stats? It's so sad that you're bragging about getting a triple-double in pickup basketball with your friends. And so the fact that you're 15, 16 years later talking about two pick sixes, Jesus Christ.
I'm not talking about them, Dan. Somebody else was there and remembered it. That's how influential it was. Like, I changed the game.
What's your end of this favor that this mm-hmm. guy is doing for you? What is he getting? How does he benefit from this? Because I'm certain he won't be like bragging about or promoting this show. or using it to like pivot to his own podcast career. So like how does he benefit? What does he get?
I mean, nothing other than that he was there. He was there and he was on my team, and that was reward enough. And so all these years, he's just been racked with this tremendous guilt that he hasn't given back in some way. Like when somebody saves your life, I assume, and you just don't know. There's no way to say thank you, you know? And so he's just taking his shots, sounds like.
So he's just, you're not helping him move or anything like that?
No.
This is, what a sweet guy.
Yes, honestly, he's the nicest person I've ever met. This is some tremendous advantage I'm taking of him and his position.
I never want to know the conversations leading up to it, because it's very funny to just imagine them. That he's like, sure, can you give me some other versions of segments so I know what we're doing? Oh, there are no segments on this show. We never do this.
Yeah, you'll get
the copy.
We're
introducing a new bit, and then we're going to end it.
And that's it. Yeah. Well, then I won't tell you how it happened. Well, that's it.
Okay.
Well, if that's the end of our show, you can follow us, both of us, on Twitter. You can follow Daniel at @DOB_INC, Soren at @Soren_LTD. You can also follow our CFO, Bacon, at Make Me Bacon, Please. Really, if you have any questions about the show or comments or criticisms, they should go to Bacon because he'll check it. You can also follow Quick Question at @QQ_SorenandDan. You can email Quick Question at QQ@SorenandDaniel@gmail.com. And you can find, follow, and hire our producer and sound engineer and editor, Gabe at GabeHarder.com.
Yeah, that's all true.
Yep, bye.